I am. Well, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not gonna lie, I thought you were gonna read some more. And I'm okay now. Every time before I'm about to speak, I'm nervous. And I was actually telling my girlfriend that where's my higher power? He's not here yet, and he's here now. So that's pretty neat. Like I said, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety day is August 3rd, 2011. I have a sponsor. A crazy sponsor, which is good. And he's got a sponsor, and I have a home group, and I sponsor guys, which I'm blessed they're here with me, actually. I guess I can give you an idea how it was like, what it's like, what I went through, and what's like now. And just quick backstory, actually. As a kid, I now realize, thinking back now, that I think my alcoholism, certain traits began when I was a kid. You know, I see it now. Like, when I went, you know, did the step 7, you know, looked at my defects of character, 6 and 7. Some of those stuff, you know, it came from since I was a kid. I see that now, and that's just a part of me. And I work every day for these defects of character, but they're with me all the time. And I think that's just God saying, you know, no one's perfect. That's how I am. I remember as a kid, though, I was extremely shy. I mean, the mere fact that I'm able to speak up here is a miracle. Like, I was the type of kid in school that I knew the answer to a question, but, you know, I wouldn't raise my hand. You know, I was always so shy, and I was a bright kid, and that's how it was, you know. I didn't want to talk to anybody because if I feel uncomfortable, I'm not going to talk to you. That's how it is, actually, when we come to these meetings. We don't want to talk to anybody. And I sure as hell didn't want to talk to you either. But I just remember it was because, you know, we moved around so much because of my dad's job, and I just never made friends. I didn't really have, my father was missing for the first, 8 years of my life. Because he was always working, you know. I caught a resentment at that. But I now realize he was working because he loved me. He wanted to provide for us. He's just, and I was the firstborn, actually, the first 8 years. He didn't know how to be a father also, but he did try. He never gave up on me. He never left. He just really wasn't there. So, and also I remember, as a kid, there was tons and tons of alcohol. Tons and tons of alcohol. And then family gatherings just meant more booze. And I remember people being drunk and stuff like that. But I never thought about drinking. You know, I never drank as a kid. It never crossed my mind. I was too busy having fun. And I was happy that way by myself. And I would have friends, and I had two or three, and that was enough for me. I wasn't the type of guy that I had to go out my way for you to like me. You know, I was perfectly fine in my own little Juan bubble, I like to call Juan's world. And and that's how it was, basically, from first to middle school. I remember middle school, I became more of a solitary guy. I mean, I had two or three friends, and I'd go to school. I mean, I hated middle school. I still do hate middle school. And I just remember, coming home and just leaving the house. I was always an outdoorsy kid. I'd ride my bike 4 miles away from my house because that was my way of getting away, actually. Instead of facing my homework or facing a problem, I just go outside and just ride my bike. I literally will ride away from my problems, which is pretty funny now. And there it is again. See, instead of facing something, I was already running away without even realizing it, you know. And that's how it was until I hit high school. And I guess in high school, sophomore year, I started coming out of my shell, I guess. You know, I started to realize who I was. Because I remember middle school, I didn't know who I wanted to be. I remember I dressed preppy, then I kind of dressed goth, and I went to this other phase where I was bandanas and stuff like that. I went through so many phases because I didn't know who I was. And it wasn't until high school. Even then, I was still confused, but I kind of found my little clique. And, all through this time, though, until my senior year in high school, I didn't drink or do a drug. I tried a certain herbal substance in sophomore year. But even then, I was just like, this isn't for me, you know. But it wasn't too long ago. I used to say, I remember my first drink, and I wasn't sure, but I was talking to my friend. He actually brought up a situation where I do remember now my first drink. It was actually, senior year in high school, we're going to this church retreat, and he snuck in a bottle of tequila. Shocking, I know, right? And I don't really remember, you know, we all talk about that feeling. I do remember drinking from it, and he says I was kind of acting crazy, but I was just happy to get away from the house. But I really don't remember that. What I do remember, my first drink, my first honest drunk, I can say that, was when it was the last week of high school, and then it was at my friend's house, and his brother just stocked up on liquor. He knew a friend, and he brought like cases and cases of liquor and beer, and I never really drank before. I didn't know what to do. So I remember just pouring myself a big glass of Bacardi 151. I didn't know that. I thought it was cool. My buddy Sean did the same thing, and we both took a shot from it. And it took me a while to hold it down. I was actually really manly at the time. I didn't throw up. I didn't have to spit it out. Chug it down. And, yeah, I did get that burning sensation feeling, thinking, oh, this is pretty cool. I can see why you guys do this a lot now, you know. Because I went to parties also. I went to parties and social events. I just never drank. I didn't want to. You know, but I don't know why that night I chose to drink that night. And I blacked out. Shocking. I really did. I blacked out. So did my buddy. And I was sick for 3 days. Like, sick. Last thing I remember is we're just taking shots like crazy. And we're playing Cranium, thinking we're the best people ever. I'm smart. And which later on, me thinking smart affected me. But I remember being sick. It was a Friday, it was sick Saturday, Sunday, and I had to go back to school Monday. But I remember thinking, wow, I can't wait to do that again. That was really fun. I can't wait to go drink again. But that's the start of my drinking career. So before I was 21, I would drink every time it was offered to me. I wouldn't go out of my way to get it. I wouldn't, like, you know, persuade people to buy me alcohol, stuff like that. If it was there, I'd drink it. If not, it was no big deal. You know, I guess I didn't cross that imaginary line yet. But all I remember is when I hit 21, that's when at the time I didn't know, but my drinking really kicked off. And mind you, this is only 3 years, you know. I remember towards the end of, right before I was 22, I was going to the liquor store on a weekly basis. I already started hiding bottles around the house, even before I realized I had a problem. You know, I don't have a problem, but I'm already stocking up the weekend or hiding, you know, bottles, because some people think I'm a drunk, because I'm not drunk. But yeah, I think right then and there, I realized I did cross that imaginary line, you know, that point of we can't control our drinking. And then, as it says in the big book, if you maybe remember when you had control, I just remember one instance where I did have control. I was at Hooters, ordered a beer. And I was like, I didn't even finish the beer, you know. And I was like, okay, that's the last time I remember actually having half a beer. Now it's ridiculous, you know. My parents, they'll drink in front of me, and it's perfectly fine. Then they'll dump half their beer and wine. And to me, you know, we all understand that doesn't make sense to me, you know. And that's how it was when I was 21. Oh yeah, backtrack a little bit. And during this time, this is an important part of my life. I grew up in a religious family, you know, and of course drinking was a bad thing, so was everything else, and I remember also, by this time, you know, I started drinking. I grew up in a loving home. My parents provided everything for me. The only problem I had probably growing up as a kid is I had troubles with speaking to my mother, and actually that got worse when I was drinking, but I can't say I came up from like bad home. They always gave me everything I wanted because I thought I deserved it. And they're very loving. I went to church. I was a good church kid. But not once during I was going to church did I actually feel anything. It's not like I had a connection to a higher power at the time. I just went just so I could shut them up and they won't think I'm doing anything bad. Actually, that was my cover-up. If I'm going to church, they won't think I'm drinking too much or something like that. And I remember during that year, I was 21 before 22, I didn't go to church at all. I thought I was an agnostic, maybe an atheist, who knows. I just didn't have a higher power. I didn't believe in God. I thought God had favorites. I thought only a select few can actually talk to him. There's like a special signal you have to do or a ritual. I don't know. I just remember being so pissed off about it, and I thought it was all a sham. And because I accepted that in my heart, thinking there's no God, it was easier for me to drink without guilt. Once you got me going, boy, I just kept on going. And then the week before I turned 22, I was already in the hospital for the first time in my life for, you know, DTs. I was already shaking by then. It was ridiculous. I spent a week there in the hospital for 5 days. And then I remember the doctor coming in asking, do you think you need help? I was like, nah. You know, I remember calling one of the church people I knew and saying, hey, can you come visit? I think I need to pray and stuff like that. To be honest with you, I remember thinking, I just want to get these people off my back. And that's why I did it. And so leaving the hospital, actually, I remember thinking, I'm going to stop drinking for like a month or two, you know, thinking that's going to help. No normal person is ever going to think, maybe I should stop drinking for a month and I'll be okay. You know, only alcoholics think that way. And so I did. I remember I stayed sober for a month or two, and then I got, you know, I started drinking again. I thought it was manageable. I was only drinking every other day, or I'd stop for a week and only drink on the weekends. And actually, that kind of worked out for a little bit until it hit the fan again. I don't know why. It's always right before my birthday. I got myself in the hospital. It happened again, like the month before my birthday. I was in the hospital with pancreatitis. I don't know if you ever had that. That's excruciating pain. It feels like someone's stabbing you over and over and over again, and you can't eat for like a week. You know, it's horrible. So, once again, they asked me, I said no. And once again, I tried the whole thing. All right, I'm not going to drink for another month or two. I should be fine. And by then, I was trying different solutions. I actually tried going back to church. I became a health nut. I started working out like crazy and running and just, maybe if I look sexy enough, I won't drink, you know, because I love myself. And what else did I try? Herbal teas. I tried, God, it says in the book what you try, you know. Taking a break from my girlfriend, which break probably meant 2 days. And, boy, that just, it's amazing how many solutions we have to try before we realize there's no other solution. So, honestly, from the age of 23 to 24, I caused a lot of destruction in my life and to my family. There's things I can never take back. I wasn't a brother anymore. I wasn't there for my sister. You know, I hate telling the story, but at the same time, I need to hear myself say it. But she, you know, in our culture, we have a quinceañera, which means a sweet 16 kind of thing. Except they do when they're 15. And we had the whole family over, and I completely ruined that day for my sister. And this thing only happens once in your lifetime. I was in the hospital again, actually, before that happened. And I remember it was kind of a happy day still, but I kind of had to be pushed to the side so I won't distract the whole people, you know, everybody. I remember I got out of the hospital. Even then, I was still sick. I remember still shaking, and I had to dance with my sister. I remember being all sweaty, and her just looking at me. She did smile, but I can tell she wasn't happy. So you figured a normal person would be like, all right, well, let's stop drinking, you know. No. I lasted another month again, I think, and I continued drinking. But once again, it's like, I think I'd only drink probably on the weekends, and that's how it'd be for like for a month, and then once again, it's an everyday thing. And that's how it was from 23 till I was 25. In that span, I ruined my brother's first communion. Again, same thing in the hospital. Actually, I got this out the day of the celebration, and I ruined, and this one always that kind of tugs at my heart, my parents' 25th anniversary. I'll never forget the look on my mother's face. You know, once again, we're dancing, and she says, I know you're not okay, but I'm just happy you're here. And she kind of forced this smile, and she was just crying the whole time. And that broke me down, but I don't know why. It's like I remember thinking, I don't want to drink. And, but I couldn't stop. And then I think by that time, I, 25, yeah, I did try to do a treatment center. I went to an IOP. Actually, before I went to the IOP, I kind of, towards the end, I started doing this Houdini thing where I'd disappear for a couple of days. Everybody's done that. You check yourself into a hotel, motel, doesn't matter. Turn off your cell phone, throw it in the toilet, doesn't matter. You just want to drink your feelings away because it got to the point where I just didn't want to feel anymore, you know. Whether I was happy, even though if I was happy, I was like, well, this is messed up. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to enjoy being happy because it's going to be ruined in any minute. And being sad and depressed, you know, we drink because it makes us feel good, you know. That's the only solution I had at the time. So I remember I disappeared for a couple of days, and they called the police, filed a missing. Well, they're about to file a missing report, but then I showed up, you know, and then I remember that was one of the times my mom said, you're no longer my son. I don't know who the hell you are anymore, you know. And that hit home. So actually, that was my first time actually trying recovery. And before I actually did that whole disappear thing, my first meeting was July 4th, 2010. And I remember sitting down. Actually, it took me a while just to pick a meeting because you guys had all these fancy names and all these sound nuts, and I don't know, first recovery or spiritual awakening, and like, man, it's nut jobs. So I finally found one that said young and sober. And, all right, yeah, young people. Because in my mind also, I did think it was mostly old guys. No offense. You know, it's just smoking cigarettes and just doing that stuff. So I picked young and sober. It's funny because at the time now, I think my higher power was watching me already, you know. And I went to this young and sober meeting. And usually when I start, you know, going frequently, it is young people. But that day, for some reason, the youngest person there was probably 30. Everybody else was older, you know. And I remember thinking, wow, this is okay. And I remember hearing the steps for the first time. And I remember, honestly, the first thing I only remember for that meeting is hearing that first step, you know. We've become powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. But the word that stuck out was unmanageable. I remember thinking, maybe there's still something I can do differently. You know, maybe I can still manage my life. But I sat through the meeting. I can't remember a word that was said. All I remember at the time thinking, it's pretty cool that these people hand out chips. I'd never heard of a chip system. So I picked up a white chip just so I can hear applause. That's how sad I was. I wanted somebody to appreciate me. And during this time, I have to put her in it because she was too big part of my life. And the craziness at this time, I was dating this girl I was with for like 5 years almost. And she actually went to the meeting with me. And during this time, when all this stuff was happening with my parents, when all this drinking was going on, I lived with her for a little bit. And I thought she was my solution also. If I could just get sober for her, then I can get sober for me. Then I can help my brother and sister and so on and so forth. But it turns out that I didn't know it, but every time I would disappoint her or we get into a big argument, I drink. You know, how can I take care of her if I can't even take care of myself? And during this time, she's going through all these mental problems. She had like two psychiatrists and Xanax, which, by the way, I tried to get Xanax also, and it didn't work. He just gave me something else. And I just remember being so latched onto her because towards the end, I didn't have friends anymore. My best friends, I didn't exactly hurt them, but I pushed them away. At the time, I thought I wasn't hurting them, but I did push them away. I ignored them. You know, I was thinking if they don't see me and if I don't cause any problems, then I can't hurt them. But in reality, I was. And being the fact that I'm not there as a friend anymore, just ignoring them, I hurt them that way. You know, but the only friends I had were the ones I drank, and I really didn't like those people, but I hung out with them because they drank. My family didn't want anything to do with me. You know, my father, although he never gave up on me, and I'm forever grateful for that man, and I never thought I'd have a father so loving and understanding that he's something else, and I'm always talking about him, to be honest with you. He's like my best friend, and he's pretty awesome. But, you know, so I didn't have anybody, so of course I'm going to latch on to this girlfriend. You know, she said she'll help me out, and we'll be okay for maybe a couple hours, and it's back to fighting. So it was like this back and forth, and all this was going on. I checked myself into IOP, and it was the first time I actually stayed sober for about 3 months, thinking, all right, you know, self-knowledge is the key. They make you feel all warm and fuzzy every time. They give you hugs and coffee and whatever and tea, and then it's about pats on the back and make you feel good and say it's going to be okay. Boy, if I wanted to be babied, I'm going to go to that place again, you know, and because they really, really make you feel good about yourself, and it teaches a lot of cool stuff about the medical aspect of alcoholism, you know. And I thought, well, this is a solution, and I know if I keep doing this, I'm not going to drink again. And by then, I think we graduate the program, and I was sober for almost 4 months. And I actually relapsed on the way to that young and sober meeting, my first meeting I ever went to. Actually, I was driving. I remember it's on the Courthouse Road. I remember driving down that road, seeing the liquor store on the left, and just glanced at it, and my mouth watered. I remember thinking that, and it watered. And I drove past it. As soon as I drove past it, I was like, nope, I'm going back. I did a U-turn, bought two bottles, took them with me, and I still went to the meeting, though, thinking, all right, God, if you're going to convince me not to drink, I'm going to go to this meeting. Well, he didn't do a good job that time. which I thought. And I remember thinking at the meeting, and I remember sitting at the meeting thinking, all right, this thing's taking way too long than it was before. Come on. And I remember being paranoid also, thinking, man, they probably saw me. They know I got these bottles in my car. They gotta know. I genuinely thought that, you know. I remember sweating, and, you know, I don't know if you guys experience this, but if you do last sober for a while and you're about to relapse and you know it, you're worried people are going to find out. They know already. I remember sweating. I didn't want to shake anybody's hand, you know. I just picked up a 3-month chip, like probably 2 weeks after before I drank, and I was a mess. But I remember, I just got past the liquor store on the way back, and I cracked the top open, and I took that big swig, and I was like, all right, things are going to be okay. And there started again. I'd say that's probably the hardest time in my life. It was around January. I didn't stop drinking until August the 3rd, and it got to the point where I was an everyday drinker again. I didn't have a job. My dad wanted nothing to do with me at work. I was so irresponsible. I was the type of kid that show up to work and then make sure everything's all right and disappear for an hour or two so I can get my fix because I couldn't stop shaking. I'd show up there sick as hell, puking on the scaffold. My dad does construction. The story where I climbed up the scaffold. As soon as I reached the top, blah, I just let it all out. And I remember thinking each time, I'm not going to drink today, you know. But as soon as I hit that, I called it the 5-hour magic mark where I'm not really sick anymore. I'm okay. My headache's not pounding. You know, like, all right, you know what? I'm okay. I survived the morning, so I'm going to go home and drink again, you know. And that's how I was. And I did pick up a lot of white chips. I wish I was a one chip guy, but no, I didn't. And then I found so many of them sometimes lying around my room and sometimes in the truck. I'd be the guy to go to a meeting in one part of the city in the morning, relapse, and go to pick up a white chip in another part of the city just so people won't see me. You know, I was a 2-white chip guy. That's how bad it got. And but my last relapse is what I guess did it for me, because, like I said, we try every way imaginable to stop drinking, to maybe go to church, do dieting, go to psychiatrists, psychologists, which I did have, by the way. It's just those poor guys never had a shot with me. I never told the truth, you know. I just went there actually so they can make me feel better, but even that they couldn't do. And with that last relapse, it was the point where you get to the point like there's nothing else you can do. And once again, I relapsed. Actually, no, I made it to the meeting and then I relapsed, which is my home group now. It was a Thursday speaker meeting. The ones that you guys know. I went there, sat in the back row, in the very last chair, and I sat for 5 minutes. It could have been just 2. I sat there, and then that feeling of just feeling just desperate and annoyed and hopeless and just so annoyed. I remember being so annoyed. And that day was awesome. It was a beautiful day. It was not a cloud in the sky. Nothing major was going on in my life. My parents kind of started talking to me again. Things were looking good, actually. But for some reason, I just felt just crappy. I didn't know why. Now I know why now. My spiritual life was in shambles still. Just because my material life was coming together in a way doesn't mean I was going to be happy. But that day, I never forget it. There was no reason for me to drink. That mental blank spot, this is in her book. Those mental blank spots that just, all of a sudden, I left that meeting. 2 minutes in, I went to the liquor store again. And I drank, and then it was that Thursday, drank again Friday. Honestly, I don't remember what really happened on Saturday, Sunday. It was all blur. Monday, I kind of remember. Monday, I disappeared again and kind of went driving to get more liquor. I ran out of gas, you know, and it was my last thing of I think it was wine at the time. Can't remember. Anyways, I remember I was like, I can't drive. I need to go to sleep somewhere. And I passed out at the parking lot of a Home Depot, and next thing I know, there's a cop knocking on my door. And I remember thinking, oh, crap. Here we go. And he arrested me for drunk in public. He didn't give me no DUI because I wasn't driving the vehicle at the time, so technically they couldn't prove what I was doing. And they took me in. And I do remember him arresting me, but I don't remember the ride over there. I was still too drunk. And all I remember is, like, I waking up in that, you know, that drunk tank jail cell, crap, and just saying with all my heart, I don't know what the F I'm going to do now. what am I going to do? Please, 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 God, help me. I know I've asked help before. I just don't know what to do. And I love telling this part. As soon as I finish that, well, my first actual prayer, this guy comes in, all bandaged up. The worst, he was so beat up, and he was in the same reason, drunk in public in the fight. He got in a huge fight. And I saw that, to me, I thought it was a sign. I was like, well, that's what I'm heading for if I keep drinking. Like, he was so bad. He just looked at me and grunted. And I was just like, okay, okay. And like I said, by this time, I was going to what is now my home group. I did get, you know, I already had some numbers. And, but by then, I remember I called my dad, and he always says, I'm glad you're okay, I'm coming to pick you up. And this is how awesome he is. Like, he never gave up on me. The only time I pushed him to the limit is when I swung at him, you know. I tried to hit him, but I forgot why. I've never been violent with my parents, but I swung at him. Well, he swung back, and he landed. And, he hit me in the head pretty hard. That was the only time I pushed him to the limits. And even then, he said he's so sorry he did that to me. But he was the only one waiting out there when I got out. And mind you, when I got arrested, I didn't have any shirt, shoelaces, socks. All I had was a pair of shorts. I don't even know what to do with my boxers, to be honest with you. That's how I came out. So sick and hopeless, you know. And just so sick and spiritually and physically. And but he was there. And the only thing he said was, okay, let's do this for real this time. Let's do this for real. I was like, okay, all right. And I went home. I was sick for a couple of days, puking. I couldn't stop, you know. I wasn't shaking too much. And I called this guy, which is a part of a home group, Robert, and I asked for the number, which would become, you know, my first sponsor. And actually, I called Mark out of desperation. And Mark's, I don't know exactly what Mark said, but he was kind of too happy at the time. I remember being annoyed, you know. And I did ask him to sponsor me. And he said, well, let's talk about it. And I was like, God, I don't want to talk about it right now. And stuff like that. So then he hung up, and then will soon become my first sponsor called me. And I told him what's going on and everything. And he said, I would love to sponsor you. I was like, I'm coming to pick you up. I was like, okay, all right, you know. And I remember being excited that he was coming. Like, I was actually excited for the first time that someone's coming because I was just so bloody desperate. I don't know what else to do. I tried everything possible. You know, I was literally crawling inside. I was just, you guys know what I mean, so desperate. You have no solution. And I couldn't stop crying for days. I was so pitiful, you know. And, well, it was really, I'll never forget, you know, what he did. He, you know, he had a long shift at the hospital. You know, this is a guy who was, if you know his story, he was actually in federal prison. Now he's a doctor. I saw that he was happy and I wanted what he had, you know. And he came and picked me up after a long shift, and I thought that meant the world to me at the time because by then nobody really gave an S about me. I mean, everything I said was a lie. I manipulated you so I can get what I wanted. I didn't care about your feelings. I just want to feel good. So, tough luck if you don't like it. But this guy, he picked me up, and we went to a Starbucks. And he annoyed me too at the time because he wouldn't stop smiling, you know. We went to a Starbucks, and I hated the fact that we had to sit outside the Starbucks, and the sun was shining again, but the sun was shining behind him, so it wasn't hitting his face. It was hitting my face, you know. And he's just joking with me. I was like, oh, come on, dude. You know, I listened, I was patient, and then we got back in the truck, and I guess you can say he laid down his suggestions, and I had him call him every day. I didn't have a problem with that anymore. Like before, people would say that, I was like, I am not doing that, you know, but when he said it, I was like, okay. But the thing that stuck in my head was, like, you have to be willing to do whatever it takes, you have to be willing to do whatever I suggest. And I said yes, without a doubt. For the first time in my life, I didn't barter with him, I didn't argue with him, I just said yes, okay, you know. And then from there on started probably one of the toughest things I ever did was, like, actually listen to someone else, because by then I didn't want to listen to you anymore. You know, I was desperate. I was, even though I was still kind of shy, I still had the biggest ego ever. Like, I thought I still was the man, even though I'm practically homeless now, you know. I didn't have any money with me, you know. I didn't have a car. I didn't have anything at all. And barely had any friends. But it's amazing how our ego is still, nah, you're wrong, man. You know. And, but I remember saying, you just gotta be, he said it first really polite. You gotta be quiet and listen. No, you gotta shut up. It's like, okay. And, So I did that. It's gonna sound bad, but before I would latch on to anyone and anything other than the solution, but I saw he was a solution, so I latched on to my first sponsor. Like, it was vital. Like, he was so vital to my life. And yes, I would call him every day. In fact, I would call him more than twice a day, you know, sometimes three times a day, because I would have so many rough moments, and I call him. And every one time I was like, hey, Josh, you're not picking up your phone. You said if you don't pick up, I should text you. So I'm texting you, and you should call back anytime. And he did. He would call. He would stop what he was doing, and he'd call back. And I thought that was awesome at the time, although I was still annoyed that he didn't answer the first time I called. He never pushed me away. And so I didn't have a problem with the calling thing. I did have a problem with actually doing these steps honestly. And, I like this personality. He was calm when he would talk to me, but if I would really try to have my way, he would just slam me with the truth. And I hated hearing the truth. I didn't like it. I remember there were moments where I was just so mad. I thought I was mad at him, but I was mostly mad at me because I didn't like it. It made me feel unhappy, so I'm going to be like a 5-year-old and be really pouting. It's like, this sucks, this is not fair, blah, 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 you know. But the first step, by then, I realized I was experimenting with the first step every time I relapsed. But then I did realize, well, I am an alcoholic. My life is unmanageable. I have pretty much nowhere to go to but here. And like I said, first sponsor was he was life-giving, he was vital. He was my best friend, my only friend, really. And the second and third step, it was mostly the second step I had trouble with because, like I said, I didn't really know what God was. I didn't know what that stuff was, to be honest with you. I didn't know how to pray. I don't know if I was praying right. But he did say one of the first things, don't ever, ever, ever pray for yourself. Even if you think it's going to help you out, don't pray for a job. Don't pray that you make it through the day, you know, so you can be happy. Don't know. No, you just pray. The only thing you can ask for yourself is, God, just keep me sober today. That's it. That's the only thing you can pray for. I was like, okay. But I can't pray for a job? I really need a job. No. Alright. So I did it. At first it was a simple prayer. I didn't understand God, but I did it. I did it because I was willing to do whatever it takes. Mind you, I know I said that firm yes. I never stopped saying yes. Honest to God, I always said yes, 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 yes. The one time I said no, I felt like crap. I'll get to that later. But ever since, it's because I said that firm yes, you know, all the other times when I debated in my head, it was easy to say yes for me because I knew I was so desperate. But that second step, he showed me, I don't know, he was so, what's the word, cool about it. Like, he really took his time with me on the second step, you know. He made me realize how life is. And he used the word life instead of higher power in God. It's just handled life in life's terms. He taught me how to pray that way. He taught me that, one, you have absolutely no control what's going on right now. You don't know what's going on outside this door or outside this car, can you? No. That's life in it. It is in it. And then we got to that third step. And by then I believed, I don't know what happened. For some reason, I went to the, no, it was at the meeting actually. We were reading that those pages before that third step prayer was actually my favorite pages, you know. From 60 to 60, I think it's 63, you know, and how he's a director, he is the father of the light, so on and so forth. By then, I think I believed so much because I saw it in him and I saw other people smiling, and it was one of the first times I actually looked at Martin when he's actually beaming, and I didn't think, well, he's not that annoying anymore, you know. Wow, this is pretty cool. And we got on our knees and said a third step prayer, and for some people, it's really hard, but I don't know why. For me, it was the first time I actually felt loved by something greater than me. You know, I didn't have to rely on the love on somebody else anymore, whether it's a girl or my parents. I just know I was going to be okay. I remember tearing up, you know, thinking this is pretty cool. Mind you, this is a 3 to 4 months into, you know, sobriety. I didn't think I was going to feel this good quick, you know. And he kept on emphasizing, faith without work is dead. So you got to keep on working. Just because you feel goody two-shoe right now, it ain't going to last, you know. Unless you put more work into it. It's a daily reprieve. He said that to me every day, too. I remember thinking, I know what he's going to say. And he said, I'd be like, ugh. You know. And it got to the point, you know, we all get to the point where we know what our sponsor is going to say. But there's still something in us, like, maybe he'll tell us something different. So these guys actually tell me sometimes. And I would hear the answer, but it's something different. You know what he's going to say, but once you hear from your sponsor, there's an effect to it. I can't explain it, but hearing it from him, it's different. It's coming out of his mouth. And you know it's right. So I'm just like, ugh. But I don't know, that third step prayer made it easier to listen to Josh, even though I knew he was going to say it. He always said, I love saying this, he always said, dude, you need your meds, bro. Because AA is our medicine. I know other medicine can give me this happiness. And he always said, dude, you need your meds, bro. I'm having a crappy day, this guy's an a-hole at work, man. Hey, man, you need your meds, bro. Did you pray? I was like, God, yes, you know. But once we did that third step prayer, we launched right into the fourth immediately. That same day, you know, he was like, I'm not going to let you, you know, be all happy and not do something about it. We're getting to work. I was like, okay. So when I did that fourth step, I actually did it as quick as I could, you know. I did it probably in a month, I think. But that was probably one of the hardest moments in my sobriety, doing that fourth step. I didn't like writing how people pissed me off. I didn't like writing my fears. I didn't like writing my part, you know, but I did realize. And I called him so many times. But I was so unhappy for that month. I had faith in my higher power by then, but I was just so miserable. Just so miserable, and I hated it. The thought of drinking did cross my mind so many times. You know, gotta be easier if I just drank when I'm writing about this lady that pissed me off. I was going to say another word, but you know what I mean. And when I had to write about my ex-girlfriend, which I didn't want to write about, but I had to. God, I hated that. But I remember being finished. And he's like, well, when do you want to read? I was like, I want to read it now. Damn, I can't wait any longer. This stuff sucks, Josh. And I was like, I can't believe you're making me feel like this. But I know it was me. It was me. Even though I'm still blaming him, I know it's all me. It's all me. And he's like, all right, let's set it up for this weekend. And I was like, okay. Of course, I was nervous. Nervous as hell. I didn't want to do it. You know, I knew I had to. And I tell you what, it wasn't like, you know, I felt good after reading that fifth step with him. We were on his couch, and I was reading it, and it took me several hours, you know, and I choked up several times, and he actually opened up and told me some of his things. I never thought, oh, wow, you know, that's pretty cool. But even though I felt like utter crap, just, like he just scraped me from the bottom of the barrel, after I was finished reading, I did feel this sense of relief, like, oh, now I got this over with, you know. I still felt like crap because I just said it. You know, I just told him everything that I did. Everything, my deepest, darkest secrets. I can't believe I told him. To this day, I still can't believe I told him this stuff. You know, but it's pretty cool because I was willing to do whatever it takes. I felt relief. And I remember thinking, wow, it was really worth feeling like crap for that month. I survived this. I'm okay. And I didn't drink, even though I did want to drink. You know, but I'm okay. So then the sixth and seventh, that defects of character, which is... I'm the type of person, my girlfriend knows this, that if I know you're wrong, I would try to convince you maybe two times. But if I see you're, you know, before, I would waste my breath trying to convince you that you're wrong. That, you know, you got to feel how I feel, you know. Now, my sponsor, Josh, would realize, is it really worth your time to waste your breath on this? Is it really going to affect your life so much, whether or not the Red Sox are better than the Yankees? You know, stuff like this. And I was like, no, it's not. And I was like, so why don't you become the better man now, from now on, whether it's work and AA, and just suck it up, all right? Suck it up. He loves saying that. Suck it up. Is it really worth it? I was like, suck it up. You suck it up. But he's right. So many arguments, so many stuff that happens in my life, and I love saying this, what I like to call problems are not problems unless I make it a problem. You know, there are hurdles, but there's always a way around those hurdles. you know. There's always a way out, even if it's going to be tough. And he really drilled that in my head. So, like I say, I don't really argue with people. I really just take a step back. You know, I don't like it sometimes, but I do realize, wow, my day's not ruined. I'm not pissed off over this guy. Or work, whatever that thing may be, sports. And this is pretty cool. And during this time is when we had the corrections conference in North Carolina. I don't know if you guys have been down there. Yeah, I'm going to say this because remember I said I felt crappy for saying no for the first time? Well, I didn't really say no. I kind of lied. He asked me, hey, you should head down. We're all going. It's going to be a great time. Nah, I'm going to be busy. I think I got something planned. I think I need to work for the weekend. As soon as that lie came out of my mouth, I felt like crap. I felt like crap. Oh, I hated it. You know, I was like, and the reason I didn't want to go to North Carolina was because I wanted to watch basketball. I'm a big sports fan. It was the NCAA tournament. Now, how ridiculous is that? Seriously. Basketball is going to be around for a long time, but my sobriety, if I don't work on it, isn't. You know? So I said, you know what? No, I'm going. And honestly, Josh, I just lied to you, and I feel pretty bad. So let's go. And I went. And I'm so glad I went, because there I met more people. And from there on, I think that's where it kicked off that I was going to be okay and I'm actually happy. I actually started feeling happy. And around that time, I was 6-7 months sober. That was the first time I actually wasn't thinking about drinking at all. I just thought about, I can't wait to get to this meeting. I can't wait to talk to somebody else. I can't wait to talk to Josh. Well, actually, I called him Doc every time, you know. That's what I look forward to, which is ridiculous at the time. Well, I thought it was ridiculous. And 8 and 9. Man, 8 and 9. I got some of the names from 8, you know, from my 4-step, and then others, people I owed money to. And those amends, I didn't like most of them. I probably just liked one. But for the most part, I'm glad I did that. And then for you to actually take ownership of what you did, even these people are not going to acknowledge what they did to you. It was a big part of my recovery, and I know for a fact it's the reason I'm sober today, you know, to able to pay back the money I owe, to able to say stuff that I did to them, even though they're, some of them are very angry. This one guy told me he never wants to see me again, you know, but I was willing to do it, and because of that, those nice step promises started coming true. I'll get to that later, but I'm going to talk a little bit about these amends. First person I went to, I remember thinking, my father, he's easy to talk to. And it's just going to be easy. And to be honest with you, it was easy, but it was very hard for me to see it. In fact, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't really sleep that week of. I was going to make amends to my father. I was going to do it on a Saturday, but it was actually it was during the weekday that I just couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't sleep, and I was up at like 2 in the morning, and I was in the kitchen forever, and I can't sleep. I can't sleep. I really got to talk to my father. And for some reason, he woke up. You know, he was getting a glass of water. I was like, are you okay? I was like, no, we need to talk. You know, can we talk? And we sat in the living room, and I told him what I'm doing, and I told him everything I did, you know, and I know that I owe him money, and I know I wasn't a good son. And then at the time, I didn't know, but I was taking away the opportunity to be a father. You know, he could. I realized how much I took that man for granted, you know, for everything he did to me, the littlest things, you know. And he said, I know you did all that stuff. Well, I know you did most of that stuff now, but I needed to hear it from you. I wanted you to take ownership for it. And I remember getting that big lump in my throat. I was saying, thank you for not, you know, for stopping to love me. And he's like, you're my son. I'm not going to stop loving you. And I was thinking, well, this is easy. That was my mom. All right, this is the opposite of my dad. I think I spoke probably, 5-10 minutes. And she let me have it. Several hours. It seemed like several hours. It was several hours. What am I saying? She pointed out everything I did, how I hurt her. Her friends, actually, because we don't realize I'm not only hurting her. When she's sad, I'm also affecting her friends, because she can't have a good time with her friends. I took the joy out of my family's life. You know, I like saying that we have that negative ripple effect You know, my drinking affects everyone, and it does. If I'm drinking, it'll affect how my father is, and it'll affect how work is. And then the employers will be pissed off and take it out on his wife, and they'll take it on the kids, and then take it on the dog, then the dog eats like, you know, goldfish. You know, that's how it is. And she let me have it. She realized I couldn't enjoy the time I went to my friend's birthday party. I couldn't enjoy the time your grandma came. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, is there anything I can do to make it better? Well, I don't know right now. Well, what are you doing? You seem better. I'm like that you're happy. But you can do more. I remember thinking, you know, how dare you tell me what to do? You're not an AA. But she was right. You know, how can she say anything else? Out so much pain those years I drank, how can she say anything else? She had every right to say that. You know? She didn't trust me. And, but I'm glad she's home. But because this, even though I made, you know, I thought I finished making amends, she still let me have it for several weeks. I remember that time you did this. I remember that time you did that. And she, that's how it was with her. And I think, I needed to hear that. You know, she, I think she, after, I'm pretty sure she did this probably, but after she talked to me that night, I think she went to her bedroom and started listening to more stuff to bring up. Because she always had something to say. If I was feeling good, she always had something to say. You know, I'm glad she did that. Because that's how life is. You feel great. Things are going well. And then life throws you a curveball. And you're like, what the heck? You know, I was doing so good. God, why is this happening now? God, you know? But that's how life is. And she started talking to me more. Mind you, she really didn't talk to me. I hated the fact that I had to be in the same room with her. It was so, so awkward. I hated that feeling. I can't wait to get away. Today she's a completely different person. She's back to being my sarcastic mom. And I love it. And this is how much I love my parents. This weekend, actually, I was with my girlfriend, and my brother sent me a video of them dancing. Now, mind you, I know for a fact if I was still drinking, they wouldn't be dancing. They decided to dance. My mom's like, hey, let's just go to the living room and just put music on. Apparently, they danced for like a couple hours. That made me so, so happy because I know they didn't have to worry about me and my crap, me and my lies, or where am I, you know. They're having fun. I'm like, they probably forgot about me. I hope they did so they can have more fun, you know. And these little moments that happen, I never take for granted. I appreciate it so much because we can't look at that stuff when we're drinking. We're just so blinded by, you know, our drinking that we don't notice those good things. And that was awesome. So I had made all these amends. I was feeling great. These promises started coming true. I wasn't scared of talking to people. I was just happy. You know, I was okay. I won't say happy, but I was okay for the most part. Yes, I'd have my crappy days, but I knew what was going on. I knew how to call my sponsor or go do something. You know, I was okay. Like, I wasn't panicking anymore. I wasn't thinking, well, I feel like crap. That means this program's not working. You know, I knew what I had to do. But, and I remember that girlfriend I had. Well, I had to make amends to her, and I didn't want to make amends to her. In fact, I had her last. I really had to because she's too big a part of my life. And I remember, I was like, well, Doc, you know, all these other speakers talk about how they want to make amends to their girlfriends, and their sponsor says no. How come you're not saying no, you know? She's like, because how she was involved in your life, you know, you got how she, you affected her life and she affected your life to the extreme that you need to make amends to her. You know, your alcoholic drinking was, you know, affecting her life also. So I was like, okay. And I made amends to this girl. And it went very, very, very well. I thought the worst of it. You know how we can be. We psych each other out, thinking the worst. And actually, it was probably one of the best ones. And she thanked me, like, thank you for doing this. And I was like, well, thank you for listening. And it was the last time I heard of her. I didn't hear from her again. And I was so damn happy. I called my sponsor several times that night. Say, hey, man. Hey, Doc, you're probably, you know, doing something gross. Yeah, but I'm really happy right now, and thank you. Thank you so much. 10 and 11 and 12, you know. 10 and 11, that daily inventory. You know, I wasn't really good at it at first because, you know, I guess I could say I was lazy. You know, I didn't really do it. But later on during the summer when I realized I had to start to sponsor someone, I started doing it more and more. How can I be, you know, do this if I'm not doing a daily inventory? How can I sponsor someone? It's going to be very hypocritical, and I'm not applying these steps and principles. So I did, you know. And 12 is my favorite step because I love going out there and helping people out. I love it. I absolutely do. It's I know for the fact that the reason I'm sober, You know, the fact that these guys came with me, it means a lot. I never thought in the world that I'd be speaking up here and having several sponsees up, you know, with me. It means the world to me. And I'm just so happy. And how my life is today, I have a very good job. I may not like it all the time, but I'm good at it. For the first time, I'm actually good at something, and I'm truly grateful, you know. I'm good at it because I started listening to my sponsor, and I apply these steps and principles. If I'm having a bad day, I'm going to be okay, you know. I can have money in my pocket now without freaking out. I'm going to waste it, you know. I have these guys with me, and then how they can call me, how they I called my sponsor. And that's the beauty of it, you know. And I'll have my rough moments, you know. Sometimes I feel like life is a little dull. So I just polish it, make it better. I can do something about it, you know. And this is a gift. I was giving this awesome gift, and I love sharing it, you know. And but I know for a fact if I give it back, you know, if I just put it to the side, I'm going to die. I know I am. Because the way I was drinking, I was going to make it to 30. I drank my life away with 7 years. Yeah, 7 years before I actually tried to stop. You know, I remember thinking that I can last probably to 40. I mean, most of these guys in their rooms are at least 40, 50. So I got sober years of drinking. No, it wasn't going to be me. I was in the express line of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just love sharing this stuff with me. And it's priceless. That was loosely priceless. And the gifts I get on a weekly basis, even the small ones, are just, I was rocking at the fourth dimension of existence. I never thought I'd be this damn happy, to be honest with you, you know. And I don't mind if these guys are calling to a very important playoff hockey game. I'll answer the phone, you know, because, and my sponsor put it to me very well. It's like, you know, you see the name on there, but what's really saying is God. It's like, yeah, you're right, you know. I can't be selfish and ignore these guys, and I'll answer, all right? And it's pretty cool that every time I'm having trouble with something, I do pray my heart out. And one of these guys or my sponsor or somebody will call, you know. I used to think it's coincidence. I know it's not a damn coincidence. It is God. It's my higher power. And I appreciate it so much, and I don't take it for granted. And, of course, I'm not perfect. I have my defects of character, but I know I'm going to be okay. But, I love sharing this story. One of the coolest things that happened to me on my first year when I picked up my anniversary chip was my mom went to the AA meeting, my home group, and she to this day, she accepts this more. She prefers I went to the church route still, but she's okay with it. And she's never been to an AA meeting ever. But she came to this one, you know, with my father and my brother. And, as soon as I saw him, I started choking up, you know, because that meant the world to me, especially my mom. You guys met my mom? She's a nice lady, but she's just a little cold. She's a little cold. She's not very affectionate. She doesn't really give hugs, you know. I told her I love her. She's like, you too, or okay. You know, that's how she is, you know. And I'm a little spoiled alcoholic. I want hugs from my mother, of course. And, but this day, I picked up my chip, and I said thank you, and she actually came over and she gave me the biggest hug I've ever received, ever, maybe since I was a kid. She kissed my cheek and she told me she loved me. And I broke down. Oh boy, did I break down. I couldn't, it's like, oh man, this is so cool, you know. Thank you so much, God. And the other parts that get me, that really choke me up is, sorry, I'm getting a little emotional. It's when the guys I'm sponsoring and I see that they get it, I see that they're happy. You see it in their eyes, the joy in their life, and they're talking about it, and talking about recovery, helping other alcoholics, you know. That's God right there. And man, does that pump me up, you know. I was excited when I got to sponsor my first guy. I remember feeling full of fear, you know. Hope I don't ruin this guy's life. You know, but now, when I see them happy, it's the reason I'm still here, you know. And I absolutely love it. You know, our home group gets to go to jails Mondays and Wednesdays. And I get to go to that too. And I love being in there. I never thought I'd be happy going to prison. But I get to come back out, as we like to say. And those people in there are just amazing people. You know, they're running AA inside the prisons. And I got so much hope for them. And what you see what they're going through. And you see the life that they have in prison. And you you take a step back and look at your life, and I was like, well, mine's still kind of a cakewalk to better yours, and you become grateful. And those guys, I've learned so much from them, actually, you know. And I'm so plugged in, I'm so active, because my sponsor plugged me in, to be honest with you. I'm the GSR of my group. I didn't want to be, you know, but I am. And actually, I've learned so much from there, too, and I apply it in my life. I don't know. There's so much in my life going on right now that I'm truly, truly happy about. And but I will say this, I know I can do more. I absolutely can. I know for a fact that if I take a step back thinking, well, I'm going to be okay, and then I'm in trouble, you know. Once I become complacent and rely just on the other guys, I know I'm not going to be okay. And I feel it if I do that for a day or something like that. If I just be like, ah, I end up feeling just a little off. I don't feel like crap. I just feel off. Something's missing, you know. Well, I need to go do something. I don't know. But like I said, my life is completely different. I never thought I'd be happy again, like genuinely just happy, just being here. And it's all thanks to my sponsor, thanks to these guys, thanks to my home group. Like, I know it's all them, because it ain't me. It's not me. My way would have just caused me to drink and bury myself early in the grave, to be honest with you. And it's my sponsor I have today. And I tell you what, that man can talk. He can really talk. And, but every time he talks, I get something out of it. You know, even sometimes the craziest stuff. That's how he is. He's happy. And I'm forever grateful for that man. And but with that, pass and thank you for letting me share.